Hey everyone, welcome to Indie Film Grit, a podcast about indie films and indie filmmakers. I am your host, Timothy Patrick, but you can call me Tim. In this episode, I talk with actor Steve Olsen. He plays the lead role in the new feature-length comedy, Fishbowl, California, which is now available on Amazon and other VOD platforms. Steve shares insight into acting classes, commercial work, sitcoms, and how Bruce Campbell inspired him to pursue an acting career. Let's get into it. And here we are with Steve Olsen. Steve, how are you, man? Thanks for being on the podcast.
Sure, Tim. Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here, man.
I'm excited to talk with you about Fishbowl, California. You got a new film that you are the star of. That's got to be exciting.
Hey, not too shabby, especially coming out of Cleveland. That's where I'm from, and they don't have such high expectations for us coming out of that town. So,
cool.
I'll take it. Cleveland's called the mistake on the lake. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, cool. Maybe that's a good way to get started here. Before we get into the film and all that, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and you know, how you got interested in acting and filmmaking?
Yeah, sure. I grew up in Akron, Ohio, also known as Crackron. again, lots of optimism where I'm from in terms of the outlook for everybody's life. But anyways, yeah, I grew up in Northeast Ohio. Was not into acting. I was into sports, music, and all this kind of stuff, but I never really got into acting. My first attempt was the 7th grade talent show where I did Harry Carey. Well, I did Will Ferrell from SNL doing Harry Carey. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Sure, but, of course, yeah.
It was the whole, you know, hi, everybody. Hey, if you were a hot dog, would you eat yourself? I would. And then that kept going. That was about an 8-minute skit. Probably way too long.
8 minutes, and, yeah, wow.
Oh, I just kept them. It was just dead silence for 8 minutes. I don't know why I kept going. and then I think I might have even done some Owen Wilson, like, wow, hold on. Trump got elected, wow. Just 45 minutes, although I don't think Trump was elected when I was in 7th grade, but it was something, some other bit like that. Anyways, That's all the acting I did, and then up until I was 18 or 20, and I read a book by Bruce Campbell,
nice.
An actor from Evil Dead.
If Chins Could Kill, yeah, I love that book. I have that book. I got that book autographed by Bruce Campbell at a book signing.
Oh, very cool. Where? Yeah. In L.A.?
This was actually before I moved to L.A. This was in Tempe, Arizona.
Oh, wow. Wow. Sorry. Yeah, he's from Detroit and I'm Cleveland. And Sam Raimi and that whole group, they shot that up in Detroit. And it was obviously just done independently and it became this big thing. And I was really, like, inspired by their story because I was like, oh, if these guys from the middle of nowhere, from where I'm from, can do this. Maybe I can give it a try. And
so Bruce Campbell was the start of it for you.
Yeah, and it's Bruce Campbell. He's not like an Oscar-winning actor. And I'm not that great. So I'm like, well, look, if he's not that good and he's from Detroit, well, maybe I can do it.
Yeah, and you're from Cleveland, so that's like at least a step up, right?
I think Cleveland and Detroit are the same town. I don't know who split them into two.
Right.
Somebody did it.
Yeah, I've never been, but I'm not opposed to it.
Yeah, we should go sometime.
Yeah, seems like a lot of cool people come out of Ohio.
Hey, Arsenio Hall, Katie Holmes.
There you go.
Michael Keaton went to Kent State, as where I went.
Nice.
He didn't do too bad, but then there's a whole bunch of people that came out of Ohio.
But that's great, man. Inspired by Bruce Campbell. That's fantastic. He's been a hero of mine. I think Army of Darkness was the first time I really saw him, then I fell in love with all the Evil Dead movies.
You know? Oh, then you went back and you rewatched. Okay, and then you watched the other ones.
Yeah, I was never a big horror guy, so for some reason Evil Dead slipped under the radar, but it's not really horror, you know? It's like that slapstick horror.
Yeah.
Sam Raimi is just incredible.
Yeah, he is. And obviously he's gone on to really launch himself, but... What are your interests? What kind of genres are you most into?
I like a lot of things, but I guess I tend to go towards the sci-fi or the I like time travel a lot.
Oh, cool.
So
okay.
Maybe that's where Army of Darkness and I overlapped, you know. But what did you do with your inspiration from Bruce Campbell? How did you take a step towards your dreams?
I can't remember. I mean, at the time, I think I just really, really wanted to do it. I remember an intense burning sensation. Wait, that was something else. but anyways, you know, yeah, I just remember being extraordinarily driven or drawn to at least trying it. But I had no real route. I didn't know what to do. And, you know, I was like, what am I going to move all the way across the country? That's insane. Mm-hmm. And a lady walked past me at Kent State one day in Ohio. And they had a program where you could go to Cal State Los Angeles and study there for a year. And I immediately was like, I got to do it. So
nice.
So anyways, that's what I did. I did a 1-year exchange program and I ended up staying.
And what were you studying at that time?
Well, at Kent State, I wasn't studying anything. I mean, I didn't even know in high school that people were thinking of their future. And I didn't even really know it in college. I was like, wait, you have an idea, you know what you want to do? I wanted to do acting, but I didn't have any plan, but these people had plans. So I was like, I got into finance. That's what actually I got my degree in. Hmm. Once I got to LA, I mean, within the first week, I'm just trying to think back. It was like Ollie Ollie in free. You know, I was like just going all in. I think I had an agent within like 2 weeks or something. I was just so down in the pavement so fast and hard. Yeah, I was into it pretty hard from the get go. And I was going on auditions left and right, like from the get. And, even if they sucked really big, you know, because I was just so into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. There's nothing like that feeling when you first move to LA. It's a magical place for a good couple years.
and then it blindsides you.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty impressive. Yeah. You got an agent so fast and. You started doing the thing that actors do, which is try and get work. So that's great. And that, how old were you when you moved out here permanently?
I was almost 20 at the time.
Oh, so young.
19. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know how old you are now. Actually, you could be 25.
Yeah. Right. Right. I'm 21 now. No, I'm 33 now, so it's been a couple months.
So, yeah, you didn't give up. That's evident. A lot of people who come in their early 20s are gone by their mid-20s.
That's very true.
Yeah, so you stuck it out. What's the secret of that?
You know, I'm just thinking back to those times, and I remember being so into it that I couldn't even believe how into it I was. I mean, from like 20 to, you know, this is 2000, whatever that was, 2004 or something, to 2008, like that time period, I just didn't have failure in my, and I don't mean this like in that way that people say it egotistically, but it just didn't enter my mind that I wasn't gonna get somewhere. I had to do it. I just had to do it. It was just, you know, I can't really explain it, but it was, and then it turned out that no matter how much I felt that way, that actually had no impact on the results, because by the time I was 24, 25, I think I'd only done like one or two things, and it was looking pretty bleak. I mean, I was waking up in the middle of the night with like night terror, you know, night tremors or whatever you call them, sweating. I was like, oh my God, this is awful. What am I going to do? I have to move back to Ohio and work in a cubicle or, you know, whatever. I was like, I can't believe this. There's no way. This isn't fair. Right. And then it was right around that time stuff just started picking up. You know, I don't know, but I was in classes and I was auditioning just on a constant, nonstop basis. I don't know what it was. I was always asking people for advice, and if I would meet somebody, if it was anybody, an actor, even if they'd done four things, I'd be like, how'd you do that? Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
So I took everything very, very seriously.
So, you know, a lot of actors out there, or people who want to be actors out there, I've seen it before. They come to LA without a plan, and it happens a lot. But you basically did what everybody eventually ends up doing, right? You take acting classes. A lot of people do improv and just auditions. Is that pretty much the standard route for an actor in LA?
God, this is a hard question because it really depends on so many different factors. I think that's definitely a given. If you're not doing those things, you better be doing something else that's consuming your time. And if you're a stand-up comic, you better be going up every night of the week. If you're if you're an improviser, if you're in a sketch group, you should have your shows going all the time, or whatever the thing is. But whatever you're doing, it has to be at a volume, at an amount that's large. You have to think of what the average person's doing out here, and you have to do way, way more than that. So whether that's auditions or stand-up shows, or if you're a musician, if you're writing songs, you got to. I think it's a function of just the amount of work you put in.
Mm-hmm. So did you enjoy studying acting, taking acting classes? And is that an ongoing process? I mean, you hear about actors, you hear about actors that have been established and they're still going back and taking classes. Is that common?
I think it varies from person to person, from actor to actor. I think a lot of people can get away. They're just so, they're so good, they're so charming or good looking or whatever. They could probably get away with not doing it. But, you hear all kinds of big time actors that go back to, what's his name? Oh God, I just blanked on his name. He was in the Viggo Mortensen movie. Javier Bardem, that he goes back to classes every year, like his basic acting class.
Mm-hmm.
Every year. So, I don't like going to class. No, they're really embarrassing. They're just completely demoralizing and just sort of strip you of all your dignity. Because there you are, like, doing some scene in this room with six people in the middle of Hollywood that you're paying for. Mm-hmm. And then they're insulting you, telling you how bad of an actor you are, and then go do it again and do it this way. But, you know you're there for a reason. And, you got to sort of swallow your pride and keep going to those kind of things. There's all sorts of dorky, stupid stuff that I think actors just have to, you have to do it to have any shot of even scraping the surface of becoming a semi-regular working actor, unless you're just wildly lucky or talented.
I mean, the way you put it, it's almost like a hazing ritual. But do these silly things you have to do actually unlock secrets of acting? Like, is there like a breakthrough? Like when they have, all the actors start acting like a 3-year-old or something like that. I mean, does it help? Does it? It's got to do something.
Yeah, it does. I don't think those particular exercises where you're, walking around the room pretending you're like a farm animal or something. Like, I don't think that those things help, but there's no real debate that the actual teaching of like the techniques, the real acting techniques, there's no question though, especially for on camera acting. I'm not talking about necessarily like other forms of, there's different types of acting that they teach you, but there's no question I can tell night and day difference between my ability, from when I was 20 till now. Everybody has sort of a cap, I think. You're only gonna be so talented or so compelling or so whatever, but you can always move up a couple points on the 10 scale. So if you're at a 5 when you get out here, you can become an 8, you know, or a 7 if you if you train. There's I don't think it's so much a matter of making you better as it is stripping away the bad things that you're doing, if that makes sense.
Sure.
It's not as easy as it looks. And just go watch some community theater if you don't believe me, and then compare it to, like, you know, some movie you just watch in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Part of me thinks I can act. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's
I think a lot of people have this inside. Like when I've gone to a improv show, part of me wants to jump up there and do it better. Because you're so terrible.
Yeah.
Do you find that? And does that make you better, or is that just envy?
Does that desire to sort of outdo people that you're watching make you better? Is that weird?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
I think it's a very common response. I think I thought that when I was 18 or 15 or something, when I was watching TV. It's like, that looks so easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get there and there's 40 people and there's 2-3 cameras and there's a lot of money burning every second, and you better do it perfectly. Perfectly. Right. And or you know, you're getting cut out of the thing, or you're not making it to the callback. I mean, realistically, let's say 5,000 people in your category that can nail it on the first take better than you can without any question, and you have no excuse not to be able to do it that well, because there's so many people that can do it better than you can, in fewer takes than you can, in a more compelling way than you can. So it's a really, really hard. That's why it's so competitive. It's because, you know, there's so many good people, and it does look easy. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answers the question, but I mean, I think it's just so much harder than it looks. And I experience that on a daily basis. I mean, even when you're in the middle of doing it, you think you're doing it well, and then you watch it back and it's like, oh wow, not even close.
So if you're in an audition and you know that half these guys can deliver the lines perfectly, do actors start to develop like a special twinkle in their eye or a special smile or something that is unique to them to try and stand out?
Well, I think that's a major component of succeeding out here, is being able to deliver that eccentricity that's unique to you and being able to convey that in an audition, whether it's no matter what sort of genre you're acting within. That's a big thing I notice about people who sort of aren't, you know, they sort of can't make it over that hump into the working actor category. Like, I feel like they, you know, you meet them in real life, and you're like, wow, you should be an actor. You're interesting, you have a good look. Like, and then you put a camera on them, and for some reason, they don't want to let that out. You know, they sort of for some reason, it gets stifled. And so it's that transition from sort of maintaining that, those eccentricities that you have, because everybody has them. And it's sort of figuring out, okay, what does an audience find weird or interesting about me? And sort of focusing on those things and then sort of re-delivering those over and over. But letting those out, you know, it's that vulnerability of allowing yourself to show those awkward, weird parts of you or those interesting or compelling parts of you while there's people watching. And I think that's where a lot of actors get weeded out, is for some reason, some sort of wall goes up where they don't want to show that thing. I don't know what it is. Maybe that's not they don't want to show it, they just can't. You know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I still experience that all the time. I mean, I'm not even separating myself from that group. It's on a case by case basis, or not a daily audition by audition basis.
So, what was the first, in your mind, the first big acting gig you got?
Well, I mean, I think the first real job I got was a TV commercial for, let's see. Well, you know, there's the non-union work, and then you get into the unions. I think the first, like, actual real union job I got was a commercial for Arby's.
Nice.
Which was fun. I think I was 22 or so, and then, like I said, nothing happened until I was about 25, 26. That doesn't sound long, but 6 years of nothing happening is like, okay, I'm about to put a gun to my head here because that's a lot longer than it just sounds. But with nothing happening. And then once I hit 26, I don't know, something happened, especially with the TV commercials where I just got on a run and I did a couple commercials. One was for Zeus. It was called the Dart Player, the Zeus Dart Player commercial. It was very, very popular at the time. I'm on a date with a girl in a bar, I throw a dart and it hits a guy in the chest and kills him, and it went viral and all this. And I did a Bud Light one, and I did a bunch of I did all these, and that kind of, you know, got me off and running, and I was able to, I don't know, that was a big transition for me. I guess it was more of a time period than a specific job when I just was started, you know, I was able to book a lot of stuff in sort of a short period of time.
Yeah, I would imagine that having a successful string of commercials like you did, it's validation, and it's out there too. People see it, you know, and they comment to you about it. So it's very much real. And not only that, the money, right? I mean, a lot of commercials, especially if you get a national one or whatnot, can pay pretty well.
Yeah. You know, the commercials are good. People tend to find them, you know, I guess in conversations to be sort of uninteresting, which is understandable. You know, people like to hear about the movies and the TV. But that's, you know, that was my particular path, you know, as I started in the commercials. And, you know, you're right. They help with exposure, and they help with finances. And it's like, you know, they're a building block. It's like putting rungs into a ladder, and that's like sort of those are the bottom rungs you put in to sort of start trying to, for me, a lot of people are, you know, they're able to penetrate into television and film without ever going through the commercials. I wasn't able to, but
and some hit the commercials on the back end once they're an established name.
That's also true.
Yeah.
And I also know just the nature of the industry at this point is, I mean, I'll be at commercial auditions now just because it's just gotten so beyond competitive that I'll see people that were series regulars on TV shows and they're at a commercial, you know, for like a regional company because they pay, you know, they pay money. And, you know, the movie business is dried up. Although that middle budget range of films, you know, $10 to $60 million budget range has gotten eaten up. Those are gone. So all the movie actors are in TV. The TV actors are in commercials, and the commercial actors, I don't know where they went. They're probably working at Arby's.
They're back at the community theater.
Unfortunately, possibly.
Yeah, it's all very interesting. The dynamics, and I imagine, you know, you see Samuel L. Jackson asking, "What's in your wallet?" You got to think that's also brilliant marketing for him. Right?
Yeah.
He's always in front of people when people are writing scripts or thinking, and then he pops on the TV. Oh, yeah, we need that guy. I mean, everybody knows Samuel L. Jackson. They wouldn't call him that guy, but.
Right. No, but I think you're right. I think commercials and television and film have all sort of blended in people's minds. It's all basically one thing, right? They're all in the same box that you're watching, the idiot box. And, you know, if you see somebody's face on it, I don't think it matters which medium you're seeing it in, per se, as long as you're seeing it over and over. So,
So, commercials, did that lead to your work on sitcoms?
Yeah, I mean, I've done a few sitcom parts, and it did, yeah, you know, because I was able to sort of put together a reel, and then you're able to move up to like a better agent with that material that you've got, because now you have something rather than nothing. And then they can use that to pitch you, you know, it's all like what, you know, they need materials to pitch you. You can't, that's, you know, people get here and they're like, oh, I can't get an agent. It's like, well, duh, you have nothing to give. How are they going to sell you? You have nothing to sell besides your face, your headshot. I mean, a homeless guy can go print one of those. I mean, he probably already has some in his tent.
Yeah.
So it's like.
And a script.
And a script. I'm not kidding. I saw a homeless guy in Hollywood one time. They had a script that they'd written and they were talking about it on the sidewalk and they're flipping through it.
Wow.
Yeah. It's Hollyweird, man.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. What were we talking about? I lost track.
Yeah.
The sitcoms.
Oh, the sitcoms.
Just tell me a little bit about the sitcoms.
Sitcoms, I mean, I've done a few, you know. I did New Girl and Those Who Can't. I did a Comedy Central, Ving Break, which is like a short series they had. I was able to get, you know, into those, I suppose, through sort of the commercial reel that I built up. And then, like, the last sitcom I did was called Those Who Can't, which is a single camera show on True TV. It's their first sitcom. It's a hilarious show, actually. It has Sherry O'Terry from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, cool.
And I didn't set out, per se, to be a comedic actor. That was just sort of... I don't know how it happened. I just think that was the thing that I was able to use to differentiate myself. I for some reason, you know, at the beginning, I would love to do all sorts of other stuff. But that was just sort of the hook that I used. I don't know. For some reason... Some of the time, not all of the time for sure, but some of the time I was able to make people laugh. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. If I can have that effect at least like 10% of the time, maybe I could, that would lead to something. So that's how the sitcoms and all the commercials, most of the commercials I do are sort of comedic in nature. So.
And how different as for you, the actor, does it feel when you're working on a commercial versus a television sitcom? Is it in the air? Is it different? It's just a whole different, you know, whole different circus.
It definitely feels like you're sort of in the minor leagues, I guess, when you're in commercials. Well, you don't know the difference until you've done both. When you're doing commercials, it's a lot of pressure, I suppose, regardless. But then once you go and you do some TV or do a movie or something, I think the pressure feels a lot higher, especially because you're basically there to serve the star. So there's a lot of pressure on you, you know, in a TV show, I suppose, to execute your part so as to make the star look good. That's the only reason you're really there, you know. But I think they just move a lot faster. There's a lot more money on the line, and it's just a higher pressure situation. It's a big time show, you know. But it's all basically the same thing. I think once you've been doing it for a while, it's like it all comes down to that. There's a camera on you, and you have a script, and you have to do it the way they want you to do it. So.
So you mentioned pressure, and I can imagine the pressure goes even higher when you're the lead in a film. Or a project like you are with Fishbowl California.
Yeah, I think I did feel a lot of pressure there because if things go awry, there's only so many people you can point your finger at, right? That the producers can point their fingers at. So yeah, there's no question. I felt a lot of pressure. I'm sure, you know, just as the director, I'm sure felt a lot of pressure. Michael McRae, who did a great job, and I really appreciate him, you know, casting me in this. Thank you, Michael. Yeah, when you're playing the lead, there's a lot of things that are going through your head that aren't going through your head when you're doing those other things, because you're thinking, okay, I've got to carry this whole storyline, maybe with this one other person. Mm-hmm. And so what does that mean? How does that influence how you're sort of executing these various scenes? You know, when I watch a movie, I know above all else, I have to like the person. So a lot of my choices that I made, a lot of choices that I would make otherwise if I'm not playing the lead aren't, informed by that theory, by that thought. Whereas when you're playing the lead, that's sort of the overriding goal in any scene. So if you're angry, you're the lead character. You have to be funny angry, not real angry. Whereas if you're the villain, you can be real angry, not likable angry, right? So there's like, you know, you got to think about the viewer. If they're going to spend 90 minutes watching you, you don't want them to be annoyed by you or sort of put off by you too much, which, hey, maybe they're completely annoyed and put off by me in this. I don't know. But we'll find out shortly.
Yeah, I mean, this film just got released out there on DVD and Amazon. Is that correct?
Yeah, iTunes, Amazon. If you got a Apple TV, you know, type in Fishbowl, California. DVD, Amazon, all the VOD platforms, Vudu, all those things.
Exciting.
It's very exciting.
Now, did this go the film festival route before being distributed?
Yeah, we did some film festivals. We premiered at the Columbus Film Festival in Ohio, which is
very
exciting.
Hey, all right.
Yeah. Yep. That was a nice little coincidence.
Hometown hero.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about.
So, how was it? Was it great?
It was amazing. Yeah, I had a lot of my family come down. I really appreciated them. Very supportive. And we played at this tiny little theater called the Drexel, which is like old school 1950s, like the bright blinking lights on the outside with the marquee, with the letters, mm-hmm. like slid in with the, you know, old school. It was so nice. Much fun. But yeah, people are, I think, really liking the movie so far. You have no idea what people are going to think of anything that you ever do. So,
mm-hmm. Well, it's fair to say this is the biggest role you've had.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, in terms of my billing within a cast, yes, but not in terms of the budget of a project, but yes, this is the first time I've played a lead role in a movie.
The film's done and now it's out. Has any of that pressure or butterflies in your stomach died down, or is now it's even worse because you're worried about the audience?
Yeah, you're definitely sort of waiting around to see what people think. You know, it only came out a couple days ago, so we're just now starting to get in some of the, you know, just now starting to get in some of the first sort of, hey, this guy in New Jersey watched it and he posted online that it totally sucks. Or this guy and girl in Texas watched it and it's like her favorite movie now. You know, it's all over the map. There's no in between. They either, something's great or it sucks.
Right.
So it's like the reviews are like, it's a 10 or it's a 1. Yeah. I'm like, well, it's probably more like a 6.
Well, it looks good to me. I can't wait to see it. And I may be a little biased because I live in California, but the movie is set in California, right?
It is, yeah. That's not extraordinarily central to the plot, but some people have taken that out of it. You know, some people have sort of extracted that or related to the characters in that sense that, you know, it does sort of touch on, you know, the difficulties of just financially kind of living in Los Angeles and just trying to hold down a steady job and like find a girlfriend or anything. But mm-hmm. yeah, I think, I think California, but we shot it in North Hollywood. Actually, we shot a lot of it, we shot it all over, but a lot of it takes place in North Hollywood, which sort of looks like the suburbs. Mm-hmm. So I think anybody in the Midwest or anywhere, you know, it's not like we're cruising down Sunset Boulevard with the palm trees. It sort
right.
of has more of a gritty St. Vincent sort of Midwest feel to it.
Yeah, well, I saw a clip where they're in a liquor store. And to me, that is a Los Angeles liquor store, you know. So for me, it is kind of like the street level, just from what I saw, LA vibe, which I dig, you know, it's cool. I guess it would help the people listening, if you gave like a little synopsis about the film, what it's about and your character.
Yeah. So the film is about myself. My character's name is Rodney. He's sort of a deadbeat, jobless, carless, girlfriendless, can't catch a cold, and he has a bad haircut and no bed frame. And anyways, he finds himself just completely down and out. He's on the streets, and he crosses paths with this elderly, sort of ill-tempered woman named June. And as I'm sort of like stealing her power, like with I rip through her extension cord. I'm sleeping on her, you know, in my nice. Car outside of her place. So I'm bumming her power to like charge my phone, and this is how she finds me. And she puts me to work in her yard to sort of pay off, you know, that little, you know, that. And, mm-hmm. Anyways, it's sort of like an odd couple comedy. I end up moving in with her. Just, our personalities totally clash. It's like this old drunk, woman and this young guy who's got sort of a sarcastic, you know, mouth who talks back a lot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's an odd couple sort of comedy.
Now, is there any, sexual tension between you two?
I've gotten that question. Not to give any spoilers, but I think the audience will think that for sure at certain points. You know, it's just the dynamic between these two contrasting, unlikely characters that you know, the chances that they would become friends, you know, and that likelihood. Mm-hmm. And then there's all these various other characters that come through. There's sort of the neighbors and the liquor store clerk, Tim Bagley from Knocked Up and 40, or Will and Grace, he plays the neighbor. He's hilarious. Quentin Aaron from The Blind Side. Katrina Bowden plays my girlfriend from 30 Rock. Uh-huh. Kate Flannery from The Office. She's Meredith. She plays a character who interviews me at a job interview I fail at. And
you got the guy with the mustache that's in everything.
Huh. Richard Reilly.
Yeah.
I did a commercial campaign with him called The Pepsi Burns Family, where we all had heartburn. He played the dad with heartburn. They were cast in the movie, and I was cast, and there was a role that wasn't filled, and I asked Michael, the director, if we could try to get Richard in that role.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's how Richard got involved, and he's my favorite person ever. He's just the nicest man and obviously such a good actor.
Yeah, I love seeing him on screen, you know. I don't know if I ever knew his name, but he's fun to watch.
He is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's, you know, the movie... To me, it has sort of like a Carl Reiner kind of vibe. It's like a Tom Hanks, maybe a Steve Martin, like a late 80s, early 90s. It's got one of those vibes to it where it's like the characters don't end up in worse places than they started.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's kind of a feel-good comedy. It's got its lows. It's got its dark moments, but it's primarily a comedy.
Let me ask you, as an actor, you know, filmmaker, someone involved in making your career in filmmaking, was there anything you learned from this experience? Anything you can think of that you could share with, you know, young filmmakers or people struggling with acting?
You know, on a big time movie, you've got a lot of money, and Quentin Tarantino can do 60 takes, and he's going to do 60 takes.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to cover, you know, he's going to make you look good, and he's going to get what he wants. There's no question, because he's got the money to do it. You got the time to do it. In an indie film, you know, they vary. You might be so indie that you might only have like two takes, which, you know, that wasn't quite us. You know, we had some time. You really have to be on your A game and be prepared, because you only have so many, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when you cover a scene, you might do three takes from this angle. They flip it around on the other actor. They get their three takes. They might pull out for a master, and then you got three takes there. But it's, you know, most stuff is going to play in the medium or close-up shots. So it's like you got three tries at this scene. So you better know your stuff and have it like planned out, because this has to look, because we can't go back and redo this. You know, mm-hmm. We got to move on to the next scene. We got four scenes to shoot today. So it's like, I think the preparation from an actor's standpoint is extremely important, but from everybody's standpoint.
Right.
Because, but that's not true at the bigger levels. It's just, you just have less takes to do stuff. So that's one element of it. So especially in a comedy, you know, where you want to bring in various ideas, and you never know what jokes are going to land, right? You might shoot three, four different versions of a joke. Hey, say this at the end, say this. So you want to have all that stuff prepared, and that's a lot of work, you know? So you mm-hmm. want to, as much as it doesn't sound like it would be work, if you have 45 scenes over the next 20 days, that's a lot of options you have to think of in your head in terms of variations you want to give them. So I don't know. I guess that would be one thing. There's just so many elements to make in the, you know, the assembly line that a film goes across has so many stages that it's just, you really have to be meticulous to take it from the start to the finish. From the beginning, it's the script. Everybody's nitpicking, mm-hmm. going over everything with a fine-tooth comb. And then you're moving into, like, casting. And then you're moving into, okay, which camera do we shoot on? Which sound guy do we hire? Which wardrobe girl do we hire? Which makeup? And then you're into, like, now we have to, they're, you know, they're finding locations. Is this house to look better? This now it's, casting. I think it's a cast, you know. Who do you get to produce it? how do you juggle all these people's schedules? It's a nightmare. It's basically a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
But
for months at a time, just
for months at a time, you're just it's like you've got blinders on the side of your face, and you're just in this. It's like you're on a roller coaster that's in the dark, and you're just like, oh my god, when do we see the light here? I don't know. We're just going in circles at this G-force that I shouldn't be traveling at. But anyways, you just try to get those steps. I mean, I don't know. You have to be meticulous. You know, you can't really skim over too many of the steps, or it's just too, it's like a train. It's too easy for it to derail. If you miss even any of the steps, whether it's if you do a poor job with the casting or if you do a poor job with the script, you know, obviously there's so many ways, you know, if you hire the wrong DP and it doesn't look, obviously it just takes one thing for the whole thing to sort of be like, that was very blah, something didn't work about it. And,
yeah, it's incredible what us humans do. I mean, even constructing a building downtown or something, everything is incredibly difficult. Why don't we just stay in bed all day? It's bizarre.
It's so bizarre. I know exactly what you mean. I have no idea how buildings are built. Yeah, it's a crazy endeavor to set out on because it takes so long. And, you know, with a movie, with an independent movie, you have X amount of dollars. And if you make any wrong decision, if you overspend, you know, like, well, we're out of money. So it stops here. It's not, we can't take it further. So you have to, you have to have the right producers. You have to have everybody doing the right thing at the right time, and you have to be, so you have to know how to put that team together. Mm-hmm. And if you have, if you have the wrong first AD, if you have the wrong somebody, if anybody, screws up to the point where it stops that train from moving forward and it halts the process of the film's movement, the movie sits on the shelf, and that happens to a lot of movies.
Right.
Or you make the movie, but you knew you kind of cut corners and you cut the corners. Maybe the audience doesn't know, but and I'm sure we did that because obviously you can't do everything perfectly on any level. Mm-hmm. And there was so much arguing, but I think, our director, writer, producer, he was one of the producers, Michael Macri. He's a very, very driven guy, and he was very adamant about every stage of the process being moving forward. And then we also had producers, who were very meticulous about making sure, there's just so much red tape. I mean, even after you make the movie, once you get into the distribution phase, so much red tape with just mm-hmm. quality control. They check like the way, I don't know, all this stuff. If the sound has to sound just right, it has to be at a certain level, or they won't broadcast it, they won't put it out there. Right. The quality of the image, all this stuff has to be a certain level, or they won't, So all these things, it's complicated. So you really, you gotta pay attention to all these details. And I think you don't plan for all that to happen at the beginning. You're just like, let's make a movie. This sounds easy, and then
you
realize what you're in for.
Exactly. But you pulled it off with Fishbowl, California, and your team surrounding you. And it seems like you're pretty excited about this film.
I'm really excited about it. I know what it is. I know it's not a big time, it's not a big studio movie or anything. But I think it turned out really well. And I'm very proud of it. And I'm proud of all the people that worked on it. We've gotten some amazing reviews on it so far, and I think people will enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the cast is really funny. It's just one of those casts that's sort of offbeat and so quirky. You're like, oh, I know that person, and they do a great job with it. And it's I think it hits home. There's a lot of like sort of vulnerability in the script, and I think that comes through. I think the actors did a great job in sort of conveying that on screen and stuff. So it's fun. It's a funny movie.
So what's the next move? What's the next climb up the ladder? What's the next rung for you? What are you excited about in the future?
I think you're basically always looking to do something that's just a little bit bigger than the last thing that you did, right? So it's mm-hmm. like, look, I did this here. Why don't we do this next thing that's like that, but just a little bigger? And you keep trying to move up that ladder. So, you know, I'm just looking forward to, you know, doing more comedic kind of stuff, but also, you know, I'd love to mix it up and do a something more serious, or like a horror movie, or a drama, or a thriller. Any of that stuff like sounds like so much fun, but I do love comedy too. And I'm also interested in sort of generating more self-produced content.
Something like sketches or?
Yeah, sketches, web series, YouTube kind of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, after seeing what it took to make the movie, it's like, oh, that's nothing to make a 3-minute thing. But yeah, you know, if you go on my YouTube, that's where I post all my stuff. Just type in Steve Olson Actor, OLSON, and that's got all my subscribers on there.
You're on Twitter as well.
On Twitter, yeah, Twitter, Steve Olson 22, Instagram, Olson Steve 2, my website, Steve Olson Sites, SITE.com, and I think that covers up pretty much all those bases.
Awesome. Well, Steve, is there anything else you want to touch on that maybe we haven't covered?
Oh, no, I'd love for people to watch the movie. Hey, it's on iTunes. You know, if you got an Apple TV, it's on iTunes. It's like $4. It's a cup of coffee.
Oh,
you
know?
Yeah. Or Amazon, you can rent it for $4. If you got Amazon Prime, you can watch it for free, I think. Pretty sure it's on Prime. So, you know.
Nice.
And it's like $4 to rent on Prime. It's a good movie. People really like it. So Fishbowl, California, just you know, Google it. We got a bunch of reviews on there. You can go read them. Jeff York from the Chicago Independent Film Critics Circle. He's a big-time critic. He just reviewed it, and he gave it, like, a stellar review. Sure. You know, it's just a matter of getting it out there. So that's why I really appreciate you having me on, because there's so much content, you know? So it's just a matter of getting the voice out there. We got billboards up in L.A. actually right now. They got, like, about a dozen or so billboards out for it. So
really? Where's that at? Yeah. I want to see one.
Highland and Lexington, which is between Santa Monica and Sunset. There's a couple of them on like La Brea and Wilshire, I think off of Dunsmuir, Cloverdale. There's one on La Cienega and Whitworth. These are the ones I remember off the top of my head.
Now, have you gone and done the photo in front of it?
In front of one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they got a contest now. Right now, if you go out and you take a photo, like a selfie in front of one, you text it in, and we'll send you a DVD, and somebody will sign it. So I don't,
wow,
I can't promise
great.
Who, but yeah,
very cool.
Just mail the photo into our the Fishbowl California Twitter page, which is Fishbowl Cal Film. Just tweet it out to there, or post it on Fishbowl California Facebook page, and we'll send you a copy of the film.
Very
so,
cool.
Yeah, man, very exciting.
Well, Steve, thanks for being on the podcast. This was great. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Tim.
I can't wait to check out the film, and I'm going to be keeping an eye on you, and I'll be very excited to see you in other things in the coming years.
Thank you, Tim. I really appreciate you having me on, man.
Well, that's that. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Indie Film Grit podcast. Feel free to go to our website and check out the show notes, indiefilmgrit.com. Follow us on Twitter at Indie Film Grit, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Well, I should really wrap this up, but before I go, let me ask you something. Do you have the courage, the passion, and the perseverance to make indie films? Do you have enough Indie Film Grit?